MEC 90.5 FM, College Park, where college radio is good radio. We are signing off. We are signing off for the time being until the next show. Have a good one.
CFM College Park, the favorite radio station of the engineer, 10 watts of pure power.
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean On Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
We'll be right back. You are listening to WMUC FM radio here in College Park. It is 12 o'clock on a Tuesday, which means it is time for Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV. We will be right back with you with a big day of sports talk after this.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The CARE office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
All right, welcome in. We have had a big week in the sports world. There's been a lot going on, and we have a lot to talk about. The NBA playoffs have been riling up. PGA Tour, more tournaments underway. The NFL draft, the NBA draft lottery. Even the WNBA season just opened, not to mention the MLB and the NHL playoffs. There's a lot to go through. We had some great NBA games last night. That is where we are going to start. And we are going to start with the Oklahoma City Thunder taking down the Los Angeles Lakers in LA to officially sweep and move on to the Western Conference Finals. And we're going to start by talking about Game 4 because that was one of the most chaotic games of basketball I've ever seen. There was a lot of sloppy play, but also a lot of really intense and physical play. And it's kind of a game where every single possession feels like it could swing things. When you have a game of runs like that, OKC going on a 17-0 run in the second quarter, an 11-3 run late in the game, the Lakers walking back every time Oklahoma City took a 10-point lead. This was a game of stretches of shooting and stretches of good play that often led to chaotic basketball, loose balls, diving on the floor. It was super entertaining, but Oklahoma City was best equipped to handle that brand of basketball. Now, there were a couple really great performances throughout that game. Rui had a 20-point second half to keep the Lakers in it. Rui Hachimura, an unbelievable playoff run for him. We'll talk about the last play, but he had an unprecedented stretch of three-point shooting from him, at least. We haven't seen him play at that level this playoffs. And to score 20 in the second half while seemingly every other Laker was struggling, except for Austin Reeves, was massive for LA to stay in that game. Reeves was really good, but of course Shea was better. 35 points, unstoppable, really took control of the game down the stretch. And despite all of that, it was a one-point game with 20 seconds left. And LeBron James had an open look after beating somebody off the dribble to get inside to take the lead for LA with 15 seconds left. And he missed. And it made me sad to see, because I don't know if this is going to be LeBron's last game in a Laker uniform or not. And if it is, his last shot being a missed lead-taking layup is a little underwhelming. But with that being said, Oklahoma City was never going to be beaten. And we should still appreciate the performances that we got out of LeBron throughout this playoff run, despite how it may have ended. LeBron, in year 23, at 41 years old, averaged 23.7 rebounds and 8 assists in the playoffs. He outscored Shea in half the games that they played this series. For some context, because LeBron's season is over, and we're going to be looking to the offseason to see what his next stages are going to be of his career. In the playoffs this year, LeBron James scored 232 points. 232. Pretty solid for, you know, two rounds of the playoffs. Every player not named LeBron James in NBA history at age 41 or older has 212 points in the playoffs. So LeBron this season was better than every other age 41 playoff run combined. That is truly unbelievable and a testament to how well he's taken care of himself, his commitment to the game, his longevity, and it's just truly amazing how high of a level he's playing at this late into his career. He was the best player on the floor a few times this series. Granted, he was the best player on the floor the entire first round. That is not something you see from a player of that age. And even though they got swept, even though they lost a close one to OKC last night, this is still a remarkable accomplishment. And when we look back at this season for LeBron and in the context of NBA history, the way that he was able to transition from being a third option to then being the first option to going back to being the second option when Reeves was healthy to committing himself to defense and then playmaking and then rebounding. This was one of the more impressive stretches of LeBron's career that I've seen him adapting to the style of play that his team needs. And that's something that LeBron has done better than maybe anybody in the course of NBA history, is adjusting his play style to what his team needs. He's played all five positions throughout his career. You need me to play center? Sure. You need me to play shooting guard? I will. You want me to play point guard and almost win MVP? I can do that too. And so throughout this season, seemingly every other week, LeBron's role on the team was changing. And he was finding ways to be impactful anyway, and I think that deserves praise. Sticking with the Lakers for a moment, Luka Doncic missed the duration of this series and the entire playoff run. He'll be back next year for the Lakers. He's going to be, you know, the cornerstone of that franchise for the next 15 years, but missing a playoff run is really disappointing, especially after it comes following a season where Luka was playing at the offensive level that he was. He was averaging 33 points, nearly 9 rebounds, and 9 assists on incredible efficiency. Not to mention, he was really starting to turn it around as a defender. People aren't really going to acknowledge it, but if you look at a lot of the advanced stats, Luka made real progress this year as a defensive player. And if he keeps that up, following in his injury, following another offseason of, you know, training, learning a new style of offense with the Lakers, adjusting with the team as the roster gets rebuilt, I think Luka is going to have another monster season next year, and I wouldn't be surprised if it looks similar to what we saw those last couple of months of this season. Something that I thought was a little odd on the Luka end was when he got hurt, there was an initial report that said he was going to Spain to visit other doctors and try to see if there was a way for him to come back earlier, if there was some additional rehab. And then there were reports that they actually just sent him to Spain because his injury was so bad they wanted to give him time at home in Europe. And I don't know which of these stories is true. I don't like the lack of transparency, and it feels odd to send a player to a foreign country in the middle of a playoff run when they're an emotional leader. So I just think it was odd. You do now have to build around Luka. I don't know if LeBron's going to be back. He's a free agent. And you have to focus this entire team around Luka Doncic. I think you may need to trade Austin Reeves. What we have seen in the NBA today is that the teams that succeed the most are the ones with, you know, a superstar, maybe two, but for the most part, they are decked out in young players, depth pieces, rotational guys, role guys who can play high-intensity basketball. And the Lakers don't have that. They're a very old team. They're more built for the previous era of the NBA where you've got a lot of high-level guys. You know, Luka, AR, LeBron, high offensive output players. That's not really conducive to winning in this era of the NBA. So I think the steps the Lakers take this offseason, whether it be in free agency, through the draft, or through trades, to retool this roster around Luka and try to bring themselves into the modern era, I think will be interesting to see. I think the Lakers have a big offseason ahead of them. Flipping it around now to talk about OKC. You can't talk about this game without talking about Shai. 35 points and 8 assists. It was his best game of the series by far. He hadn't scored more than 22 in the first three games. And it's because the Lakers finally played him straight up. And this was something that I expected to see going into the game. The Lakers' plan for most of the series was, look, we recognize that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the best player in the world. He has been unstoppable all season. And last year in the playoffs, he tore through everybody and was unstoppable. So what we're going to do is make sure that he never really has the ball in his hands. And so every time Shai brought the ball up, every time they passed it to him, the Lakers were double-teaming him. They were trapping him. They were forcing the ball out of his hands. And it didn't work. Sure, Shai didn't really put up his numbers. He wasn't great. He played pretty poorly. But everyone else on the Thunder was playing amazing because they were going to be open. All of a sudden, if you're double-teaming one guy, you've only got three players to guard the other four on the court. So the Lakers were trying this strategy to stop Shai and losing every game by nearly 20 points anyway. So heading into game four, they had to decide, look, clearly this plan's not working. We're going to have to guard Shai, and if he kills us, he kills us. And sure enough, Shai killed him. 35 points, as I mentioned. A lot of them came in the fourth quarter down the stretch, drawing fouls in big spots, stopping Laker runs. And those are the kinds of buckets that really matter the most. Shai's the best player in the world for a reason. There was almost no point in the game last night where I doubted anything Shai did with the ball. If he pulled up a shot, it felt like it was going in. If he tried a risky pass, it felt like it would get through. When the game was in doubt, it felt like he was just going to come through and win it for him. And even if LeBron had hit the shot to take the lead with 20 seconds left, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I am fairly confident that if you gave Shai the ball down one, they were probably going to win it anyway. So it was a great performance for him, a great performance for the team as a whole. The Thunder still yet to lose a game these playoffs. They swept the Suns, have now swept the Lakers as well, and their team is just really deep and coming together. Now that they've beaten LA this early, they get to rest until their opponent on the other side of the bracket finishes up their series. Minnesota and the Spurs, by the way, that one might go seven. That's going to be a brutal series, and whoever wins that is going to be then traveling to OKC, where a rested Thunder team is going to be waiting. So these extra few days, maybe even up to a week of rest, depending on how long the other series goes, is going to be remarkably beneficial for their chances to start the Western Conference Finals. I want to shout out a few of their other depth pieces who are really great during the series, but specifically last night. A.J. Mitchell, 28 points, lights out from three, great defense as well. He was the second best player on the floor for the Thunder last night, and if you've got A.J. Mitchell playing that way, you're in good shape. Chet Holmgren, some really solid play. Isaiah Hartenstein, the Thunder bigs, always performing very well. And I've said this throughout the entire year. This is the makings of a really great team. An all-time great team, even. And when OKC goes on to win the title, they're going to be one of the five best teams of the century. And it's cool to watch them in action and appreciate them before they actually get there. Okay, switching up gears, speaking of the Western Conference Finals, because the Thunder are going to have to take on a difficult opponent coming off of a difficult series. But let's talk about that series. The Spurs and the Timberwolves have been battling, and the game four was no different. That one was physical. And we have to start with the Victor Wembanyama ejection, because that was the biggest story from the game. Now, if you missed it, it came early on. Naz Reid was getting a little chippy with Wemby. And when Wemby was fighting for a loose ball, he swung his elbow, hit Naz Reid in the face, knocked him backwards. And he was then given a flagrant two, which is, one of the worst penalties, and ejected from the game for his action. So I just want to say to Wemby real quick, man, you're above this. You're one of the most famous and well-recognized and respected players in the league. Why are you throwing elbows at your opponent's sixth man? I get that he was getting chippy with you. I get he was physical. I get that he knocked you over a couple of times while you were fighting for rebounds. There is no need for this. You have to understand the consequences. Your team needs you. Down the stretch of this game, they were desperate for somebody like Wemby to step up, and they didn't have him there. And, by the way, after receiving the flagrant two, him going over and sitting on the bench and acting like he didn't know he was suspended, I thought was a little ridiculous. Not suspended, ejected.
I thought was a little ridiculous. You're one of the best players in the world. You've been playing basketball your entire life. You've been following the NBA. You know the consequences of a flagrant two. You just were trying to make a bigger deal out of it. And I'm glad that he wasn't suspended for that, because, you know, we always want to see our great players play in the playoffs. But I was surprised that there wasn't at least a fine. I thought Wemby deserved some sort of consequences for this action. He needs to understand there is responsibility that comes with being one of the best players in the world. You can't be a dirty player. Otherwise, you're not going to get the admiration and respect all time from fans and the media that you otherwise would. Not to mention, if you've got little kids talking about you and watching you, you can't be acting dirty on national television. So Wemby's above this. I didn't like it. And him losing it, or him being ejected, is likely what cost them game four. And the thing is, even though Wemby was out, game four was a reminder of how deep the Spurs are. Granted, they did lose by two. It was a close game. But the fact that they were able to keep it close without Wemby being there is impressive. They won a few games in the first round without Wemby. Devin Vassell, De'Aaron Fox, and Stephon Castle combined for 68 points. They even had a 7-point lead with 9 minutes left. So it was a great effort and an impressive job by the Spurs to not only stay in the game, but seemingly be in control of it at some points during the fourth quarter. Unfortunately for San Antonio, when Anthony Edwards is on the floor, you're not really in control of anything. Because Anthony Edwards' performance was remarkable. That was yet another all-time fourth quarter from Anthony Edwards. He exploded in this game, 36 points and 6 assists on 60% field goal percentage during the game. Remarkable efficiency, intense play, great defense throughout the entire match. Not to mention, in the fourth quarter, he had 16 points. He went 6 of 8 shooting in the fourth quarter alone. I mentioned the Spurs were up 7 with 9 minutes left. After that moment, Anthony Edwards makes 2 pull-up jumpers, hits 2 threes, gets to the free throw line twice, all in a 4-minute span. And by the time that stretch is done, the Timberwolves are back in the lead, and they never returned it to San Antonio. They closed out the game and won. And that is a performance that you remember. If Anthony Edwards doesn't go off like that in the fourth quarter, score at the volume he did, take over the game the way that they needed him to, the Timberwolves are down 3-1. They're coming off of a game where they lost to the Spurs without Wemby, and now they're traveling to San Antonio to possibly get closed out in 5. Instead, this series is very much live. The Spurs are scrapping a little bit to try to figure out what they're going to do with the Wemby situation. And the Timberwolves are proving once again why you can never give up on them and why it is never safe to bet against them as an organization. Their team plays well. They play physical. They play aggressive defense. And they are not going to give you an easy win no matter what. And for Anthony Edwards to have that kind of superstar moment is just a reminder of how great of a player he is, the respect that he demands in this league as a clear top 10 player, and making a case for a top 7 or top 5 player very soon. And he's going to have to close out this playoff run. He's going to have to beat San Antonio if he wants to really get in some of those conversations, but he absolutely deserves it. Anthony Edwards is a superstar in this league, and we should talk about him like such. So with my series pick, as I mentioned, it is 2-2. Game 5 is in San Antonio tomorrow night. And I'm going to stick with my pick of the Spurs. It's been my pick the whole series. I've had the Spurs winning in 7. I think that the Timberwolves, while last night's win was really impressive, and Anthony Edwards deserves all the credit for playing that well, and even if Wemby was there, I'm sure Ant would still be great. I think Wemby not being there made a huge difference. I think when you get Wembanyama back for the last 3 games, you've got 2 of them at home. I just think San Antonio is going to be able to close out the series And when it comes down to a game seven, I think that Wemby's going to be at his absolute best. All right, one more story in the NBA real quick. We're going to talk about the Knicks because they have just been truly dominant so far these playoffs. They won by 30 points to close out the 76ers, and they have been unstoppable all playoffs. Their five starters, their few key bench players have all been playing at really high levels, and it has led to some incredible wins. As I mentioned, they won the last closeout game by 30 points. They beat Atlanta by 51 in Game 6 to close them out. They are averaging a 25-point win in each of their last seven games against playoff teams. That is an absurd feat and an almost unbelievable accomplishment. I want to talk about just how insane this Knicks performance is. They have the eighth highest point differential in the history of the NBA playoffs. That means they have outscored opponents by more than every other team in playoff history except for seven. Those seven, by the way, the 91 Bulls, Jordan's first ring, the 71 Bucks with Kareem and Oscar, the 2001 Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, the 87 Lakers, which was Showtime with Magic and Kareem, the 2018 Warriors, which is the greatest team of all time, and the 2017 Warriors, which is the greatest team of all time, as well as the 2014 San Antonio Spurs, which is an all-time great team. What does this mean? It means the Knicks are playing like an all-time great team, guys. The Knicks are performing as if they're one of the best teams in the history of basketball, and that cannot go understated. Granted, you know, the Sixers were kind of playing terribly, and it's been probably an unsustainable stretch of shooting and high-level play, and we'll see how the Knicks kind of regress to the mean after these first two rounds. But you have to give credit where credit is due. You can only play the teams you're matched up against, and the Knicks have really been kicking butt so far these playoffs. Not to mention, they are now in a similar situation to Oklahoma City, where they finished their first-round playoff series fairly quick. The other playoff series on the other side of the bracket is tied and seems really intense and physical and grueling. And the Knicks now get to rest until whoever ends up winning has to take on a well-rested Knicks team. And that's a huge advantage for them. So you have to understand and appreciate just how good New York has been. On the Sixer side of things, I don't know what you do at this point, honestly, as a franchise. It feels like the Sixers have kind of been running in place for the last, like, eight seasons. Ever since things got going with Embiid and Ben Simmons, you know, they were a consistent playoff team, but they can't get out of the second round. So, you know, you move Ben Simmons, you acquire James Harden, and you still can't get out of the second round. You move James Harden, still can't get out. You bring in Paul George, Tyrese Maxey develops, all this stuff. You still can't get out of the second round. So I really don't know what the Sixers can do at this point other than try to focus on a rebuild. The biggest question is what you do with Joel Embiid, because he is kind of the weirdest piece, I suppose, of any team dealing with a star. Because when he's playing and when he's healthy, he's a top 10 player in the NBA, without question. But he's never healthy. And I don't know which team is going to be interested in acquiring a player like that unless they happen to be ready to compete and happen to have a lot of money available. Because if you're Philly, you're supposed to be paying Embiid $60 million for each of the next 3 years. I don't think they view Embiid as the core piece of their franchise anymore. I think that has to be Maxey. Maxey, by the way, great player. He is only getting better. He's young. He's a quick scorer. He's more fit for this style of modern basketball. So if it's possible to move Embiid and try to get a bunch of young players or picks and start to really build out this team, I would. Because when you've got Maxey, you've got Vijay Ejikom, you've got a couple other good players, that's a solid start for a culture. They just upset Boston. That's a good push for a rebuild. And you can really
put something together that I think that can compete in the East. But if you're going to keep playing the game with Embiid where it's, you know, our only real path to winning a championship is if he's healthy for the duration of the playoffs, I just don't think that's a reliable strategy. Paul George is going to be in question too. He's making a lot of money. The Sixers have a lot of decisions to make this offseason. The Sixers and LA, the Lakers, I think are the two biggest teams to look at for what they do in the offseason and how they rebuild their roster. Because I think big changes are going to be coming to both. All right. We're halfway through the first hour of our show here. Talked about some of the big NBA stories from this past week. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be checking in on a few announcements that have come out of the NFL regarding the schedule release with you right back after this.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Did you know that the University of Maryland is one of the 50 fittest colleges in America? Our state-of-the-art Epley Recreation Center, School of Public Health, Ritchie Coliseum, and Cole Fieldhouse have a number of resources that help keep Terps happy, active, and healthy. Join the daily group fitness workouts, request a personal trainer, or own your independence and build your own training plan. Exercise can improve muscle strength and boost your endurance and confidence. Feel better and live longer.
Ever wonder why you feel like a complete zombie when your alarm goes off after 8 hours, if you're even lucky enough to get that much sleep? As college students, it feels almost impossible for us to get enough sleep. We're constantly told to get 8 hours, but is that really the magic number? Did you know that throughout the night, your body cycles through periods of light sleep and very deep sleep? Most people's sleep cycles tend to last 90 minutes, so if you aim for 8 hours, your alarm is likely to go off just as you're diving into deeper sleep. Try aiming for 7.5 hours of sleep and see how you feel in the morning. If you feel great, you probably nailed it and found your sleep cycle. If you don't feel perfect just yet, test out an 85 or 95 minute sleep cycle instead. Not only will you feel great in the mornings once you discover your magic number, you'll also add about 30 minutes of valuable time to your day.
I can ride my bike with no handlebars. No handlebars.
Sign up for the weekly bike rides every Tuesday around College Park. Don't have a bike? Just rent it from the campus bike shop. Spending time outdoors has great benefits. It raises your vitamin D levels, it improves concentration and focus, helps you recover from injury and stress, and it may even mean more smiles throughout the day. To get more information, log on to crs.umd/Maryland Adventure Program. Hashtag stay active.
I can tell you about Lee Erickson. I know all the words to De Colores, and I'm proud to be an American.
All right, welcome back in. We just talked about the NBA, went down some of the major series and games that have closed out this past week and will be closing out in this upcoming week. And we are going to switch gears over to the NFL, where it was announced we got our first, you know, confirmed game of the NFL season on the schedule. And it is Sunday Night Football, Week 1, where the Dallas Cowboys are heading to New York to take on the Giants. And I am very much looking forward to this game. This seems to be the matchup we get in Week 1 every single time that the Giants are remotely entertaining. I remember after the Giants surprised teams and went on that wild card run year a few seasons ago, they got Dallas Week 1 the next game. And so the NFL loves this matchup. It brings in ratings. It's very exciting.
Every time. Now, this is not necessarily an even matchup over the last 15 years or so. Since the Giants won the Super Bowl in 2012, they are 6-22 against the Dallas Cowboys. They are 1-6 against the Cowboys in week one matchups, and they are 4-10 against Dallas at home. So it has been quite the one-sided affair here. Dallas has beaten New York pretty handily. The Giants have been in the gutter of the NFL for the last decade, it seems. They've won fewer games than almost any other franchise in that stretch. And with that being said, I'm picking the New York Giants to win. Give me the Giants 27-23 to open up the season in week one. Now, I get everything I just said. The Cowboys have historically owned the New York Giants, at least in the last 15 years. The Giants, every time they seem to almost get off the ground, come crashing back down. They've struggled with their offensive line. They've struggled at quarterback. They've struggled with their defense. Every position of the field, coaching. But this is the year. Things are turning around. The Giants are here to stay. And I believe John Harbaugh's team is going to announce themselves in this week one matchup against Dallas. Now, how are they going to do it? Firstly, with an unstoppable run game. The Giants have reconstructed their entire roster and their entire scheme to fit physicality, intensity. The Giants have one of the most, I think, prepared run games in the league. They brought in Greg Roman as an offensive assistant. He is one of the more creative and well-organized run game coordinators that we have seen in the last 20 years in the NFL. Not to mention Cam Scadaboo and Tyrone Tracy, a perfectly complementary running back pair where you can get high-level play from either one of them. Then you talk about the blocking. Well, they've started to boost up the offensive line. Jermaine Illuminor and Andrew Thomas are two really solid offensive tackles. Francis Maui-Goa is a big, strong offensive guard. And when you've got Maui-Goa leading the way behind Pat Ricard, who is, you know, a 300-pound fullback, a bruiser, going to clear defenders out, and then you've got Cam Scadaboo, who's actually got the ball behind him, it's a physical run game. I don't think the Cowboys' linebacking core can be trusted. I definitely don't think the Cowboys' secondary can be trusted. And I think the Giants might just run all over Dallas. But that's just the first piece of it. The second piece is Jackson Dart officially playing in year two. And he, I expect, is going to take a big leap. We have seen this from quarterbacks a lot over the last half decade. Just last season, Drake May had a pretty decent and promising rookie year. They brought in the right coach. All of a sudden, everything clicks. He looks great. Caleb Williams, decent, promising rookie year. They bring in the right coach. All of a sudden, he develops, looks really great. I think the same thing is going to happen for Jackson Dart. We have seen a lot from him last season. He was incredibly talented, throwing the football, evading pressure, being mobile, staying in the pocket, delivering accurate deep passes. Not to mention, he's fast. He can contribute to the run game as well. Read options, QB scrambles, those are all things that he excels in. And now that you give him a full offseason after his rookie year to really get reacquainted, to learn Harbaugh's system, to play in the new offense, to continue understanding how to play at NFL speed and at against NFL-level defenders. That is all going to lead to improvement, and I think Jackson Dart is going to tear apart this Dallas secondary. I don't think they have anybody that can guard Malik Nabers, and I think it's going to be a battle. Now, it's not going to be easy. Dallas is a very good team. And as I mentioned, they always find a way to beat New York. And one of the biggest contributors to that is Dak Prescott, who is a very good quarterback and one of the more reliable playmakers and game managers you'll see in the NFL. The big question with Dallas is how their receivers are going to play.
We know CeeDee Lamb can play like a number one, but the question is going to be around George Pickens. He's had a bit of a dramatic offseason, and if we know anything about him, he's a bit of a dramatic player. And he thought that he had earned a bigger contract last year than what he was offered, because he had a career season last year. And Dallas is forcing him now to play on the franchise tag. So, are we going to get the George Pickens that feels like he has to play for a contract, puts in 110% effort every play and looks great, in which case the Giants might really be in trouble because their secondary is abysmal? Or is it going to be the Pickens that, you know, sometimes has issues on the sideline or isn't putting up the same kind of stats consistently that people expect him to, like we got for the first major chunk of his career? I don't know. I do think that the Giants are going to have a game plan for this Cowboys passing attack. I think that their pass rush is going to be very effective with Brian Burns, Abdul Carter now in year two, Kayvon Thibodeau, hopefully still with the team, Arvil Reese as a rookie making an impact. But I think that this is a big game for the future of the Giants. I've become slow to be optimistic about this team because I've been optimistic about New York and they've come up short quite frequently. But I just have a feeling that this week one game on Sunday night is going to feel different. And while all the culture still is odd with Dallas, Jerry Jones still meddling in things, causing headlines, causing problems, I think the Giants are going to come away with a surprise win. All right. We're going to take one more quick break. When we return, we're going through some more basketball, and we're heading over to the other league with you right after this.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Health Center, a peer counseling and crisis intervention hotline at the University of Maryland. Help Center is here to listen. No issue is too big or too small. We are here for you. Help Center offers anonymous and confidential hotline phone calls and walk-in services, free anonymous pregnancy testing, and free condoms. Call 301-314-HELP or stop by Help Center on the third floor of South Campus Diner today. You are not alone. Won't you please, please help me?
The Campus Pantry is a free resource available for all UMD students, faculty, and staff experiencing food insecurity. It is open 5 days a week from 10 to 5 and is located on the ground floor of the South Campus Dining Building next to the Common Shop. You must swipe your university ID before entering and check out before leaving. Make sure to bring your own reusable bag. For more information, you can visit the UMD Campus Pantry website at campuspantry.umd.edu. That's campuspantry.umd.edu.
All right, welcome back into the show. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to WMUC FM Radio on 90.5. I'm Jack Wynn here, hosting Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in the DMV area. We've had an electric show for you so far. We started off talking about the NBA, reviewed the Thunder closing out the Lakers in four games. We talked about Victor Wembanyama's controversial ejection and lack of suspension, as well as Anthony Edwards' dominance. We followed it up with the Knicks destroying the 76ers and securing a spot in the Eastern Conference Finals. And we just talked about the announcement
confirming that the Cowboys would head to New York to take on the Giants for the first matchup of Sunday Night Football of the year. I'm picking the Giants to win and announce themselves as a new contender in the NFC on the back of Jackson Dart and a great run game and pass rush. But we move forwards, and there's a lot left to talk about other than the NBA and the NFL, because another league started up this week, and that is the next season of the WNBA. And one of the first games of the year, they gave the fans what they wanted to see. It was the Fever versus the Dallas Wings, and it was Caitlin Clark versus Paige Beckers. And these are two players who are going to be faces of the league for a very long time. It's Caitlin's third year, it's Paige's second year, so they're still developing. They're not exactly the best players in the league right now, but give it a few seasons, I imagine that they'll both get there and that this will be a fun and exciting rivalry for years to come. In this first matchup, though, Paige did get the win. It was a close one. The Wings won 107-104, a high-scoring outing for the WNBA, but Paige Beckers was outstanding. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists on 8 of 10 shooting from the field, by the way. She shot 80% during this game against Caitlin, so just remarkably efficient. Paige always seems to understand her role on the team better than most stars do, because she is a point guard. She is somebody who likes to have the ball in her hands and distribute and play make, but she also understands when it's time to take a step back. When she was at UConn, she was surrounded by a lot of talent. She understood letting her teammates get theirs was helpful. And the same is true now in the WNBA. She has good talent around her. Arike Ogunbowale, 22 points, 5 rebounds. Oh no, 22 points and 5 combined steals and blocks. So it was a great performance from Ogunbowale, the new co-star with Paige. And I think the two of them are going to be a really fun duo. I think Paige, like I said, she's still got some development to do, but she's also already a top 10 player, in my opinion. She has a very high ceiling and a very high floor, and putting her with a current superstar like Arike Ogunbowale will lead to results. Jessica Shepherd, by the way, 13 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists on 5 of 8 shooting from the field. Really solid performance from her, bringing some of the presence down low, made things difficult for Caitlin Clark driving inside at points. And I think that the Wings are a team that are going to take big steps this year. Obviously, they had a big offseason. They have the number one draft pick. They're trying to retool this roster and build around Paige. But this was also a team that missed the playoffs last year. And while I do think they're going to take big steps and, you know, be live in the WNBA this season, I don't necessarily think that they are championship contenders just yet. I think that there are a lot of other really good teams in the league so far. And until Paige becomes that real second superstar, I don't think Dallas is going to have it. On the flip side, Caitlin Clark, a little bit of an underwhelming performance for her as well. 20 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, pretty solid, but she shot 2 of 9 from the 3-point line. That's not good. Caitlin Clark is supposed to be better than that. She was the third best player on her own team, it felt like at times. Aaliyah Boston had 23 points and 4 combined steals and blocks. Kelsey Mitchell, 30 points on 50% from the field. And I think that the Fever are much more likely to be contenders at the end of the year than the Wings are, despite how this first game played out, because I just trust the Fever's infrastructure a little bit more. This is a team, mind you, that made a run to the semifinals last year. They were a few games away from being in the finals, and that was during a season where Caitlin Clark missed the entire back half of the year. So now you take that team, you input a superstar, somebody who is a perfectly complementary piece to the rest of this roster because they've been building it around Caitlin, and I think that come the end of the year, the Fever are going to be one of the best teams in the WNBA. Caitlin Clark and Kelsey Mitchell are an unstoppable backcourt. I don't know if there's any team in the league that can guard both of them. And when you add Aaliyah Boston, who is quickly becoming one of the three best centers in the WNBA right now, that's a really hard team to deal with.
Some of their depth pieces have continued to improve. There are some question marks about their rotational players and their coaching even, but I have a lot of optimism for this team. I think that we're going to see Caitlin take a big leap this season. I know that it wasn't the first game we wanted. 2 of 9 from three is not ideal. She had some pretty poor moments of shot selection at different points in the game. But I just think that she's better than that, and I expect her to play like it. Now, my predictions for the rest of the season, I'll start with MVP. I think it's going to be a close three-way battle between AJ Wilson, Caitlin Clark, and Nafisa Collier. Those are three remarkable players. Aja has won 3 of the last 4 MVPs. Nafisa Collier has quickly become one of the best two-way guards that this league has seen. And I just think Caitlin's going to develop and that the Fever are going to have a really good season. And if they do, it's going to be hard to not at least have her in the conversation given the media attention that she's going to receive. So my pick is Aja. I think she wins her 3rd in a row and her 4th MVP in 5 years simply because it's just still painfully obvious she's the best player in the world. And the Aces are going to be one of the best teams in the league, and there's going to be a clear disparity and gap between Aja and whoever the next best player is. And if that's the case, I think you just have to give it to her. Let her keep collecting these awards. Aja is already the greatest player in WNBA history, in my opinion. When you have 3 rings, 3 MVPs, Defensive Player of the Year awards, Finals MVPs, it's just an unmatched legacy from any of these other players that the league has seen. We've seen some really talented female basketball players from back in the 80s and 90s, but the way that this modern era has grown and the league has expanded and the game has developed, you have to give it to Aja, and I think it's fair to assume that she's going to win it. Now, for the playoffs, I've got the Liberty over the Lynx in the semifinals. I think that the Lynx with Nafisa Collier are going to be competitive again. I think that they're going to be back in the mix, but I think the Liberty are too good, too well run. They came up short last year. I think that they've learned from that first round exit and have retooled. And I think they're going to find their way into the championship. Then I've got the Aces over the Fever on the other side of things. I think the Fever get back to the semifinals. I think that this is a really good team, as I mentioned. I think Caitlin's going to take a big leap. We've already seen that Aaliyah Boston and Kelsey Mitchell have been playing really well. And I see no reason to doubt that the Fever are going to get back to where they were. And I don't see reason to believe that they'll be any worse. So that leaves the finals, the Aces and the Liberty, which a few years ago seemed to be the matchup that we got every time. And I'm going to take the Aces to win. I think Sabrina Ionescu is a great player. Breonna Stewart, great player. That Liberty organization have proven that they can compete with anybody over the last half decade of basketball. But I just think the Aces are too good, too stacked. Jackie Young, Chelsea Gray, of course, Aja Wilson. This team as a whole is just really, really talented and really well coached. And I think Aja Wilson is hungry for another title, and I think that the Aces are going to get there. All right, we're going to take one quick break. We're going to come back to close out the first hour of our show, where we will be talking about some reports surrounding the great Giannis Antetokounmpo. With you back after this.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
Are those early morning classes starting to feel like a marathon? Did Dodge strike again, towing your car when you least expected it? We get it, and we're here to listen. Whether it's academic stress, relationship issues, or just a bout of loneliness, Lean On Me College Park is here for you. Our supporters are fellow students trained in mental health support to help you through life's ups and downs. You can text our free and anonymous line anytime from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week at 301-494-8808. You can also follow us at leanonme_CP for updates and resources. Again, our number is 301-494-8808. We hope you'll let us be a shoulder for you to lean on.
All right, welcome back in. We've got about 5 minutes left here in the first hour of our show. And I wanted to talk about a story that came out. It was reported earlier this week that the Milwaukee Bucks were officially fielding trade offers for Giannis Antetokounmpo. And this didn't surprise me. It feels like this has been almost years in the making. And it's a little sad because the Bucks really squandered this opportunity. When they won the title in 2022, it felt like they were set up for the next half decade and to be the team of the NBA. And instead, they dealt with a couple seasons of injuries. They didn't surround Giannis with the right talent. They made some bad trades. They got rid of Drew Holiday. They got rid of Chris Middleton. They got rid of Bobby Portis, who was a, I don't know why I mentioned Bobby Portis, but he was a great role player for them back in that title run. Anyway, regardless, they got rid of their two best players who were complementary to Giannis, Middleton and Holiday. They didn't get the right role people to replace them. Kyle Kuzma wasn't the guy. And the organization just seemed to fall apart. Giannis got hurt a couple of times, and they never got back over the hump. They never even really got back to a conference finals. And that's why it's a bit underwhelming for Giannis. And I hope that he finds his way out soon. There were murmurs about him demanding a trade for at least two seasons now, and he has been a little touchy about it. He said, no, you know, I want to stay in Milwaukee, but, you know, I also want to win, and, you know, those two things can't really go hand in hand anymore. So the Bucks listening to offers for Giannis, and there are three spots that I think are the clearest. The Bulls are reportedly interested in him. I don't think he's going to end up in Chicago. So starting off with my personal preference, the place that I've been calling to trade for Giannis for the entire year, which is the Houston Rockets. When they traded for Kevin Durant last offseason, the reports were that they held on to some assets in case Giannis became available. Well, Giannis is available. Alperen Şengün is a fine player. He's a young center. He's got some potential. But you absolutely cannot win a championship if he is your best or second best guy. Jabari Smith, good young piece. Decent player. He needs to move. Şengün, Jabari Smith, couple of picks, maybe other pieces if needed. Send them to Milwaukee to acquire Giannis. For the Bucks, you can build around those two young guys and the pieces you received, tear it down, and restart. That's a fine rebuild. I think that's a smart decision. For both sides, Giannis gets to go link up with Kevin Durant. They become one of the most exciting teams in the NBA, and Milwaukee gets a jump start on that rebuild. However, the reports are he likes being on the East Coast. He likes being, you know, as close to Greece proximity-wise as possible, flight-wise. And there are other teams that fit that description a little more that also have the assets to acquire Giannis. The most interesting one, in my opinion, is the Boston Celtics, who we don't know what's going to happen with Jaylen Brown, but it seems like the Celtics are going to retool a bit. After they won the title a few years ago, then Tatum got hurt and Brown shrunk in these playoffs. They could use a culture shift. They need to put better pieces around, you know, their best players on the roster. And I think moving Jaylen Brown in some package for Giannis, then pairing Giannis with Jason Tatum, that's a really scary team in the East. And then lastly, the Atlanta Hawks. You know, Jonathan Kuminga, Zachary Richtese, Jalen Johnson, some combination of those guys, plus picks and other pieces. That's another jump start on the rebuild for Milwaukee. I don't really think that it's smart for Atlanta because I don't think that they would be contenders, and I don't think that Giannis would be in a position to all of a sudden win championships with the Hawks. But either of these two other locations I think would be really interesting. I hope he ends up in Houston, but if he goes to Boston in exchange for some sort of Jaylen Brown package or maybe even a three-way trade where the two of them move, could be very interesting. All right, we're going to play nothing, actually. We've got 10 seconds left in our show here. I think that Giannis moving would be really interesting for the league. Superstar.